But we do have a legislator who has another commitment very shortly, and so we're going to start with a public hearing on HJR 56. So, Jim, you want to provide us a summary?
Yes, sir. HJR 56 creates a task force on public post-secondary education in the Portland metropolitan area.
Okay. Representative?
Jim, would you already...
Absolutely. Come on.
Ben Nibbins of the Community College Association.
Okay.
That act of the order.
Well, that'd be fine if the three of you. As soon as we'll go back when we hear from you folks, that'd be great.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you very much for hearing this resolution and for allowing me to skip the line a little bit. I learned that in school, so it's... I learned you're not supposed to. That's what I learned in school. I do remember. This bill came about from thinking about a prior bill. You had assigned to you a bill talking about the merger of Portland State University and Oregon Health and Sciences University that was universally accepted by the presidents of the two universities in the Oregon University system as being unacceptable to them. That bill came about because sitting in the economic summit in December that was put on by the governor and by Senators Wyden and Smith, one of the clear indications of a problem in economic development in the metropolitan area was that the metropolitan area had what was categorized by U.S. News and World Report and other rating agencies as a fourth-tier university. And as I sat there thinking about that in that session at the convention center, it came to me that the ultimate merger of these two institutions, which seem like totally complementary institutions to me anyway, and I'm on both faculties, would be a way to move from a tier four to a tier two university. After a lot of conversations with PSU, OHSU, and with the chancellor, it was very clear to me that was an idea that was not quite ready for its time, as often happens to my ideas. So I wasn't surprised by that. But in a conversation that I had with Mr. Cairns and with the chancellor, it came clear to me that both the chancellor, both Chancellor Jarvis and I, had a very clear notion that if there was not a plan for quality higher education in the Portland metropolitan area, there was not a plan for education in this state, because that was vital. And the solution that I was proposing as a solution skipped the discussions of the problem and went immediately to a solution. And after contemplating that meeting, I called Mr. Cairns back and said, well, what about if we sort of jointly came in with the notion of creating an interim committee to raise the question of what is the future of higher ed in the Portland metropolitan area? And I asked Mr. Cairns to work with the legislative council to develop this proposal. After he did such an able job with that, I slipped in on the line also discussing the question of an ultimate merger with PSU and OHSU, and he was kind enough not to rip it out, although he is very clear, he continues to remain clear that OUS does not support that particular notion. So what I'm here asking for, and what this resolution does, is the development of an interim committee to really begin a fairly broad-based interim commission to really begin a serious discussion of how do we work over the next decade to create a plan for high quality higher education in the metropolitan area that will serve the educational needs of the metro area of the state and the economic development needs of the area as well, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Representative, you're, I know you and I have had a conversation. I think, and we don't know its eventual outcome, but I think we passed House Bill 2817, which set up a post-secondary education task force, private, independent, nonprofit universities, the OUS system, and community colleges earlier.
I actually
in the works now. Does this conflict with, or would it complement, or what is your view?
Well, let me say, Mr. Chair, that I'm not certain. I just literally heard about that today, and haven't had a chance to read it. And that has the advantage, I understand, of not having a fiscal impact that would go with it. But this structure of this commission is structured to include independent colleges and universities as well as community colleges. I had a chance to talk this over very early with Senator Mark Hatfield, who I serve on a board with, and that was his first suggestion when we talk about this, is make sure you're including the independent colleges and the community colleges in this discussion. So I do need to say I don't know the answer to that question, Mr. Chair.
Fair enough. Representative Hobson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The question that I have, Representative, is why can't this kind of communication and this planning take place now under the purview of the State Board of Higher Education, including OHSU in that conversation, if it's necessary?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Hobson, we do at least in those two universities and in other contexts, work on a micro level in a lot of coordinated ways. I know you have a letter from PSU and OHSU that mentions the fact that I started in 1992 the Master of Public Health program jointly among three universities in the state, and it's now, I think, the third ranked Master of Public Health program in the country. And I know the Oregon Graduate Institute Department of Engineering is working with Portland State School of Engineering to develop some joint programs, and I know that both PSU and OHSU are working to help provide some substance at the bottom of that wonderful tram from the top of the hill down to the river as well. But the problem is that these are all micro solutions and deal with specific problems. And it's very clear to me what's needed is somebody to step back and look in the larger context of how to deal with this in a way where you have all the parties in the room. And that's not an easy thing to get at the same time. This would bring the OUS, OHSU, the community colleges, the independent colleges, industry, the legislature, into it in a way that would allow you to step back, ask what are the problems that need to be solved, what are the potential solutions to those problems, and how do they rank, and I, my hope is, would allow the development of a long-term program, not a simple solution, but a program that could be implemented, say, over the next decade, because we're not going to solve this problem in 1 year or in one biennium or maybe even in one decade. But if you don't have a map, you know the old saying, if you don't know where you're going, any road gets you there. And it seems to me it's really time for us to create that vision for where we want higher education to be in the metropolitan area. That allows the development then of a plan for the state, because in many ways, the metropolitan area needs to be the anchor for education in the state, which it, in fact, has not been over the last over the history of our state. The anchor has been outside of the metropolitan area.
Can I follow that up?
Yes, follow up.
I have two quickie questions. Who wrote the there's no identification on the attachment in regard to the Metropolitan Collaborative Model, a strategy to establish an top-tier engineering, yada, yada, yada.
Hi. Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, That's attached to the thing with OHSU and PSU,
right? Right.
I suppose it was a joint activity of OHSU and PSU.
A joint memorandum.
Yeah. Follow up?
Thank you. The other question I have, Representative, it is your opinion and you feel that a committee composed of, if I'm reading it quickly and accurately, of more members outside of the higher ed system than there are members within the system are better going to be able to address the needs, the concerns, and the issues in this project?
Yes, I absolutely do. Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, I'm learning. I'll get this off. I absolutely do. I think there are a variety of interests here that need to be dealt with in a very specific way. We obviously can't create a solution that's not acceptable to the Oregon University system. I mean, that's clear, but I think we also want to make sure we don't create a solution that's not acceptable to the community colleges and to the independent colleges and to the economic interests and to the political interests of the metropolitan area and the state. So I think it can only come from outside the Oregon University system, but it has to produce something that makes sense to the university system, but to all the other parties as well.
Thank you.
Okay. Grattan, please.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, Grattan Karen, Director of Government Relations for the Oregon University System. Yes. Let me say at the outset that Representative Greenlich has very accurately and fully reported the conversations which have transpired between himself and myself and the Chancellor. We believe that HGR 56 is a significant improvement over his earlier measure, which would have, by statute, forced a merger between OHSU and PSU. Both of those institutions, the Chancellor and the OUS, were unalterably opposed to that measure. this is a significant improvement over it. However, we remain deeply opposed and strongly opposed and stand with the letter that you received from Presidents Bernstein and Kohler, and would urge you, if you take action on the measure, that paragraph G of subsection 6 of section 1 be extinguished. We believe that, as Representative Greenlich said, he did, in fact, amend the add to the proposal which was written on the back of an envelope with that, and we would be opposed to it. We think that is probably a horrendous distraction which would have to be taken seriously and which we'd have to expend an awful lot of our energy addressing to the detriment of the rest of the subjects addressed in the measure. The remainder of the resolution really suggests a number of important topics which could be taken up by a task force, one composed like this or with other members, and would address issues that are of concern to the metropolitan area where more than one out of two people live. And it could be done either by this task force or within the work plan of the interim Education Committee or some other avenue. If the legislative administration budget will support the task force, we have no funds for that purpose, we would be more than happy to participate in it if the legislature in wisdom decided to allocate those resources to it. And we think we could use that as an opportunity to take time out to highlight some of the extraordinary kinds of collaborations which are going on between public and private colleges and universities in the metropolitan area, between the universities that provide services within the metropolitan area and community colleges, and the high schools reaching down into the grades, into the middle schools for those collaborative efforts. And would be an opportunity to tell you about some of the outstanding work that's going on that we don't have time to tell you during a fresher of a session. So it would be an opportunity to tell you of the good work now going on. The co-enrollments, the single point of entry, the collaboration between private and public post-secondary faculty, the high school relations and the programs which are sponsored there, especially in sciences and minority teacher candidates, all the many, many other things that we don't have time and I won't take time today to tell you about, which are going on there and which could be enhanced. So this task force, if you have the resources for it and are willing to do it, we would collaborate in that, but only with the extraction of that one element. Otherwise, we'd have to say we'd be in opposition to the measure.
Mr. Irvine, my comment on that.
Yes, Representative?
The item in subsection G in my mind is an idea of such compelling logic that I'm convinced whether or not it's in here, it's an idea that any reasonable person considering standing aside from where they are and considering the situation will ultimately come to anyway. So I would have no problem having this moving forward without that in the work session, and I would hope I would have the opportunity to raise it at the commission level, and I'm certain it's simply a matter of time until this obvious solution becomes obvious to other people as well as me.
Okay. Rem?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Rem Nivens, the Oregon Community College Association. What I would have to say basically echoes Mr. Karen's comments, and by way of background, we were asked by Representative Greenlick's office to come in and talk about this concept and forming this task force and what possibilities might come out of it. And we appreciated that. Obviously, in the Portland metro area, Portland Community Colleges is a major provider of post-secondary education in the area, and we would welcome being a part of that conversation. But we also, without the removal of that section, looking at aggregating colleges, would be opposed to House Joint Resolution 56 for a lot of the same reasons Mr. Karen's talked about. We do believe it's a good idea to look at how post-secondary education operates in that area and what things can be done to help improve it. But for multiple reasons, our colleges would be against looking at mergers. So I just want to get that on the record, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Well, thank you, Representative. You've opened the door, and whether someone will walk through it remains to be seen.
That's right, and I expect to be back here, so I'm not going to quit trying anyhow.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Ed Johnston.
Good afternoon. My name is Ed Johnston from Lincoln County. And I'm concerned with the bill, and I guess I'm going to be opposing the bill because it makes me really concerned dealing with more government into our own personal information of even college students or families, the way this thing is done. I mean, it really concerns me that we're setting up a bill that we're saying that we cannot teach our own children how to do financial means, and we have to go through educational institutions to do that, and we're teaching our children that we're incapable of doing this.
I know that you. I understand you've signed up for Senate Bill 761. We're on HCR 56.
Or I thought it was Senate Bill 56. I must have the wrong one.
Yeah, I think you
do. I think I'm way off track right now. I think I missed the train.
We'll be there.
Well, withdrawal on that one.
That's right.
Misunderstood. I was on the wrong one. Sorry about that.
No problem. Okay, that concludes the number of folks who have signed up to testify on HJR 56, and with that, we'll close the public hearing on HJR 56. We have indicated the public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 11A. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 11A. We do not know. Okay, we do have a sign. No sign-ups. Does anyone want to add anything to our Wednesday meeting? Okay, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 11A, and we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 11A. Jim, do you want to give us some?
Senate Bill 11A.
Repeal of laws pertaining to county school districts, direct county school districts to become common school districts. We had last had our public hearing on 4:30. We have no fiscal impact indicated, and there are no amendments.
Okay. Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Senate Bill 11A to the floor with a due pass recommendation, please.
Thank you. Representative Hobson moves Senate Bill 11A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we had a very worthwhile and thought-provoking discussion on this Wednesday, and I would just like to reiterate a little where we are. This is an opportunity for even smaller school districts to have a say in what ultimately happens to them. And I have to say also for the record that I, for the most part, am more in favor of schools getting together rather than coming apart. But I think in this case it has an unfair advantage for some of the larger districts. So I'm certainly speaking in favor of this.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, Gina, would you call the roll, please?
Aye.
No.
Aye.
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 Chair votes aye. Senate Bill 11A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Carrier?
Thank you.
Representative Hobson, thank you for volunteering. Representative, you're the only one who made eye contact with me when I asked, and so sure enough, you were selected. We'll open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 129. Jim.
Thank you, sir. Senate Bill 129 allows the State Board of Education to adopt fees for private career teacher registration and fees to provide copies of private career student transcripts maintained at the department.
Thank you.
Allows the Superintendent of Public Instruction to enter into contracts regarding the Tuition Protection Fund without regard to public contract bidding requirements. Modifies existing fee schedule, declares an emergency, takes effect July 1, and has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Thanks.
Okay. Ray Lindley and Diane Baldwin, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Backlund and members of the committee. I am Ray Lindley, the Director of Private Career Schools for the Department of Education, and with me today is Diane Baldwin, who is an education specialist in our office. We are here in support of Senate Bill 129, which has been drafted for a few reasons, as you see in your packet. I would like to just give you a quick summary of the four issues involved here. The first involves a fund which might not be a familiar term to many people, called the Tuition Protection Fund. This was actually established by the legislature about 10 or 12 years ago to protect students who sign up for and pay tuition to a private career school in Oregon, and if for some reason the school defaults on its contract with the student, in cases closing the school prior to the students completing the education, this fund, which is set aside in the state treasurer, and is the money from the fund comes from the schools. The schools must pay into this fund. Is used then to help either provide a teach out for the students at another school, or to make a prorated refund of the tuition which they have paid to protect them. The purpose of the this portion of the bill that we are doing is to exempt the Department of Education from the contracting laws, which say that if the contract is over $75,000, it must be established a bidding process and so forth. In the 5 years that I have been in this office, we have only used the Tuition Protection Fund for closing a school three times. two of the times, this bill would not have been necessary. For one time, the total amount paid out would have been $30,000, which would have fit within the requirement. And another time, the total amount paid out, according to the amount in which the school was vested, was $100,000. However, there was not a teach-out arranged, and so when you parcel the money out among all of the students, no student received more than $6,000 or $7,000. The third time, however, is one where this bill would have been very helpful. The amount for which the school was vested and the amount of money that we had to spend out of the tuition protection fund was $200,000. We were able to secure a school immediately willing to do the teach out. And teach out simply means they agree that they do not charge the students any more money, and they will provide the identical program for which the students had signed up to begin with. And that $200,000, we ran into the issue of the $75,000 being over the $75,000 amount. In this particular case, we were able to contract with Portland State University, another agency, and Portland State University actually contracted with the school so that we could enact the teach-out within 3 weeks of the time the school closed. Had we waited for the bidding process, it probably would have been up to 90 days. We believe that this is not fair to the students who are already disenfranchised to a great degree because the school in which they had become enrolled was no longer, and we needed to do all we could to provide the education for these students. That cost us, in addition to the $200,000 that came out of the fund, an additional $20,000 to pay Portland State University, which was definitely a fee that they deserved, to monitor the teach-out. And this law would, if we were exempt from this law, this would allow us, with the approval of the state superintendent, to contract with a school directly for the teach-out. The chances of it being over the $75,000 amount are somewhat slim. However, in the few occasions when it is above that amount, we believe that it is in the best interest of the students that we try to get that teach out done as quickly as possible. The second part of this bill is deals with the processing fee for private career school teacher registrations. Currently, we have a litany of schools, obviously, of everything in a career path that a student might enter. And one of them, we have a special relationship with the Health Licensing Office, and we license actually the continuing education and the initial licensure for all cosmetology teachers in the state. And by statute and rule, they are required to renew those every 3 years. It is a matter of documenting the continuing education hours and the initial application for these teachers that does take a lot of staff time and interest, money to work on these teacher registrations. Currently, the law does not allow us to charge for this, and we want in statute to have the freedom to charge for this service. The third is the area of student transcripts. When a private career school closes, by law, they are to send to the Department of Education all transcripts of students who have ever been enrolled at that school to the Department of Education, and we maintain the official transcripts. We have numerous requests for transcripts. And as you are aware, in most colleges and universities, there is a charge for providing a transcript, an official transcript. It is not within the law at this point for us to charge to do that, and we are simply attempting to recoup the cost that we have to do with the staff time, office time, postage, and so forth. And the fourth area of the bill is a matter of some minor housekeeping language changes. These were suggested by our Assistant Attorney General, the Department's Assistant Attorney General, Gary Cordy. At the time the fees were corrected in the last legislative session, there was an error made in the chart, and this brings to somewhat of a consistency the fee schedule, making sure that we don't have the same amount be charged for the same amount of tuition. And the other two would be renumbering two of the statutes, or two of the portions of the statute, to go in line with the recommendations for statute changes that we have made. Thank you for your time, Chair Backlund and committee, and I would be open to answering any questions that you might have.
Great. We have no one else signed up except you and Diane. Are you aware of any opposition to this bill or concerns about it?
Chair Backlund, I am not. We have a state advisory committee that is composed of 11 people across the state, and we have actually worked through this with them at two of our most recent meetings, and we have their 100% support, and they have agreed that if you had any questions, they would be happy to come to testify, and they represent all the schools in the state.
Okay. Thank you. Diane? You're
available
or support, whatever is needed. Okay. Any questions, members? Okay. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 129, and we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 129. Representative Hobson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Senate Bill 129 to the floor, or excuse me, to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Due pass recommendation, and the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Hobson moves Senate Bill 129 with a due pass recommendation, and the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Discussion. Gina.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Senate Bill 129, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 129. And we had at least one person who wanted to testify. Is Ed not here? Okay. We'll move to a work session. Excuse me. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 761. Jim, would you want to read us a summary, please?
Yes, sir. Senate Bill 761 repeals examination requirements that apply to children who are taught by private teachers, parents, or legal guardians, allows exemption from compulsory school attendance laws for children taught at the direction of the parents or legal guardian, declares an emergency. We have four amendments attached to the SMS, the -4, -5, -7, -8. I checked with Senator Starr, and these are the four that he's agreed that we can move if we so desire. It does not have a subsequent referral.
Okay, thank you very much. Would you need bigger staff come up, please?
She's just going to respond.
Okay, just respond if we had questions. Okay. Okay. Marcia Kelly?
4, 5, 7, 8.
That's right.
Marcia? Chair Backlund, members of the committee, I don't know what the substance of your amendments are. I prepared my testimony sort of on the original bill. My name is Marcia Kelly, and I'm here as a member of the Public Policy Committee for the American Association of University Women. We have branches throughout the state, Pendleton, Wallala County, Lakeview, and approximately 2,700 members across the state, plus around 700 members at large of the American Association of University Women who reside in Oregon. We are concerned about this bill because we feel that testing aids in understanding where a child is in the educational process and in its assessments. And so if you do not have testing that is standardized, how do you know where that child is in their learning process? If a homeschool or a private, if these children then go into the public schools, and if they are not at a certain level in their grade level in their reading, then they're put into, they would have to be put into a remedial situation to bring them up. And if they are behind, it would be under the new No Child Left Behind, if they're in schools, it would be a detriment to those school districts because they haven't been able to, you know, work with those kids to bring them to the point where the other students might be. And if they are so far behind, they would be additional individual education program candidates, and that is also a costly endeavor for the school districts to do. We think that the repeal is not well-founded, and we want to make sure that no child is left behind, even those who are outside of the public school system. We want strong communities, and we know that education is vital for people to be full citizens and participants in their community, and we think that this is a bad bill.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you, Marcia. Is Ed Johnston in the room? He is not. Okay, that concludes the sign-up list. We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 761, and we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 761.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Farr.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dashmore amendments to Senate Bill 761.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Farr moves the Dashmore amendments to Senate Bill 761. Discussion? Opposition?
Yes.
Representative Nolan? Okay, we will so note, and the Dash 4s are approved. Representative Farr?
I move the Dash 5 amendments to Senate Bill 761.
Representative Farr moves the Dash 5 amendments to 761, Senate Bill 761, as previously amended.
As previously amended.
Discussion? Representative Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I understand this one correctly, it makes a different timeline for students who are going to participate in interscholastic sports. So I will be a no vote on that. I think everybody should be doing it at the same time.
Yeah, I would comment on the Dash 5s. This amendment came to us from the Executive Director of the Oregon School Activities Association, and he felt it was very important to make this clarification or to make this statement in the bill. And so I wanted to add that for what I guess I would say is clarification. Any other discussion? Any opposition? Okay, the Dash 5s then are approved. Representative Farr?
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 7 amendments to Senate Bill 761 as previously amended.
Representative Farr moves the Dash 7 amendments to Senate Bill 761 as previously amended. Discussion?
Mr.
Representative Hoffman?
I have a question if I could impose upon the Department of Education.
Yes.
If you remember, this is the special ed circumstance that I had brought up before, and my question is, does this...
Excuse me. Can you come up, Randy?
Does this change in any way the special ed requirements and services for homeschool students from what it currently is?
Chair Backman, Representative Hobson, my understanding is that this amendment was to ensure that districts made every effort to comply with the child find requirement, given the fact that under the language in the bill, they would have no contact with a certain group of those homeschool kids, but that this would direct them to provide that notice when and if they receive notice that a student is being enrolled in or withdrawn from public school and homeschool.
So, Randy, you're saying then that the Dash 7s is intended to benefit those who would be receiving or who might need special education services.
Chair Backman, to ensure that the district or that the school district makes that notification and gives those the parents of those kids notice that they stand ready to provide those services if and when they are appropriate.
Okay. Okay, anyone else? Members? Okay, any objections?
I did object. And I will too.
Representative Nolan, Representative Hobson, so noted. The amendments, the dash 7 amendments to Senate Bill 761 are approved. Representative Farr?
Mr. Chair, I move the dash 8 amendments to House Bill, to Senate Bill, excuse me, 761 as previously amended.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Farr moves the dash 8 amendments to Senate Bill 761 as previously amended. Discussion. Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will be objecting to these amendments as I expressed the other day. I think that asking parents, and remember we're dealing with the 5 or 10% that are, I can't remember, wish I could remember the word that Senator Starr, undedicated parents anyway, not the 90% who are doing an excellent job, but to ask them to make a statement as whether their kids are excused or unexcused when, as one of the criteria as to whether they can withdraw them, makes it rather moot to even participate in that process.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Dalton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to note that on the Dash 8 amendments in Section 1, Subsection 4, that reads, if a child who is enrolled in a public school has more than 5 unexcused absences during the 25 scheduled school days prior, et cetera, I just I have some discomfort about that line. I think that it doesn't do enough to protect against abuses, so I have some general discomfort with that subsection and wanted to note it.
Mm-hmm. As I understand it, Representative, this amendment was worked out with between the homeschool supporters and the ESD, the LEM ESD, and it was designed to deal with those homeschoolers who might avoid school attendance by simply dropping out of school and therefore being calling themselves homeschool students. So this was an attempt to deal with that. And I understand that you have some concern, and anyway, that was the intent, I think. Okay. Discussion? Opposition? Representative Nolan? Representative Hobson? Okay, duly noted. The dash 8 amendments to Senate Bill 761 as previously amended are declared passed. Representative Farr.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 761 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
One moment, Representative. We'll come back and take that. We're going to call a very brief recess, and we can should be able to stay in the room. So. Education, back to order. And Representative Farr, we were addressing you.
And is the motion standing?
Repeat the motion, please.
I move Senate Bill 761 to the House floor as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you.
And I'd like to speak to that, please.
Okay. Representative Farr moves Senate Bill 761 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Mr. Chair, I had some reservations all along regarding removing the requirement for registration of homeschool children from the statute. My reservation has been mainly overcome by the amendments that require the attendance prior to the removal of a student from public schools. I obviously don't believe that the 90% to 95% of parents who are legitimately homeschooling their children are affected by this at all, and I think that the amendments cover a large part of the ones that do fall into the category of whatever the term Senator Starr used.
Okay. Representative Hobson.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I will be voting against this. I have a number of concerns, but I think what it ends up being is a balance, and I appreciate the fact from all the folks who've testified in regarding to parental rights and state responsibility. And I appreciate and accept that. I do believe that, again, we keep using this 90%, which I think is a nice round figure, 90%, and I'm sure the folks in this room represent that 90% who are doing an outstanding job. And that is the parental right to provide that education, and I honor that. However, the other 5 to 10%, whatever that number might be, I believe that we as a state have not only an obligation but a responsibility and a real duty to protect those kids that do, in fact, fall through the crack. I do not feel that having to register, filling out a single piece of paper, and taking a test four times in 12 years is overburdensome at all in any way. And with that kind of a burden on the homeschool parents, I think on balance, it gives us the opportunity to protect some of those students who cannot protect themselves. And I've recently come into some information that indicates to me there's quite a large group of homeschooled parents who do not do well on the test. And remember that the obligation is to do up to the 15th percentile. That's terrible, but there's quite a large number that don't even come up to the 50th percentile. So I'm really concerned about that. On the truancy part, with all due respect, there are parents who will be untruthful about whether or not those absences were excused. And if the district says we're not going to release you to homeschooling because you have five unexcused absences or whatever the number might be, some of those parents might actually be untruthful, and therefore they would have the child at home with all the worst fears that we have been concerned about. So I just feel that on balance, I very definitely feel the need to be a no vote.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Dalton.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I think it's safe to say that I've been, as each day goes by that we've considered this bill, agonizing more and more so about this bill and the public policy that is advanced by this bill. In my mind, we heard testimony about a small group of families that abused the system, and to me, I don't think we have adequately addressed the 5 to 10% of the students that abuse the system are falling through the cracks, and you know, philosophically, I'm unwilling to give up on those children, and I think that we have to have a mechanism to protect against abuse. And I've had terrific and tremendous experience with students that are homeschooled. I've had a number of experiences with homeschoolers working on my campaigns. There are some very close friends of mine that work in the building here that have been excellent examples of homeschool folks. And I hate to spend time talking about that because that's not my concern. I don't want to sit here and say, well, the majority of people are doing a great job, and so we should sort of advance this because that the greater group outweigh this small percentage. But you know, I'm going to have trouble for the next few days here feeling like if we vote this bill through, you know, I'm not sure what's going to happen to that 5-10%. I have serious concerns, and it really has affected me as a person deliberating on a bill like this. I'm going to offer an aye vote on this bill. I consider it a courtesy vote, and I hope that this bill doesn't have the adverse effects that I fear. So, thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Bakken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually didn't want to say anything about this bill, but a couple comments have prompted me to want to say something. This 5 to 10% that we keep, I guess the number we're batting around, you don't ever want to have any child in any community without the kind of resources they need to succeed in life. But since we're talking statistics, that's a small number. And if what we want to do is provide the kind of resources we should for every kid, then we darn well better start focusing on our public education system, where you are looking at, I don't know what the number would be, but probably hundreds of times of more children than that, that we are not providing services for, adequate services for. And so if that's going to be the guiding philosophy for this legislative body, then we best mark ourselves with it in every area. And I think if these homeschoolers are failing at the rate of 5 to 10%, then congratulations for having such a high percentage that are doing so great.
Thank you. Well, I might toss in my two cents worth here, too. As you know, I was a longtime teacher, 37 years, a social studies teacher, advanced placement American history, and before that, before advanced placement came to Salem-Keizer, I was always fortunate to be able to teach the college prep kids. So in that context, I met a number of homeschool kids who had been homeschooled for a number of years and then came to high school when they were sophomores or some other arrangement, but they had been homeschooled prior to my meeting them, and without exception, each of these students did very, very well. And so I had a very positive impression of homeschooled students. And it is important to consider that 5 to 10%. I think Representative Vakian's comments are very appropriate. But we've also heard an awful lot of good things about that vast majority of homeschoolers who are doing well. So whatever that's worth, that's it. With that, Gina, I'll call the roll, please.
Representative Scott?
Aye.
Representative
Vakian? Aye.
Representative
Belko? Aye.
Representative
Farr? Aye.
No.
No. Aye. Having received the constitutional majority, Senate Bill 761, as amended, is declared passed. Carrier? Representative Farr carries. Thank you. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 761. And committee members, before we adjourn, I hope you have a great weekend. And with that,
I understand that this is our last regular
meeting. Oh, very good point. Yes, this could be, audience, this could be our last regularly scheduled House committee meeting, so keep your eye on the schedule. We could pass bills, I think, according to the current schedule, through May 16th, but we're not operating now on a regular Monday, Wednesday, Friday basis. Thank you.
I'd like to thank the committee members for the professional work. I've never, I believe, worked with such a professional and responsible group of people. Thank you.
Thank you. Great. With that, we will adjourn the meeting.
Okay.